Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, a talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network. Remember my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Well, the celebrity segment, always my favorite thing in the world. And these guys are really doing some great things. They're out there. They have passion. They have a great product. And they're really trying to help people, especially in this time, especially when we talk about the tragedy that happened in Connecticut, that we really have to look at children and how they're treated, because at times things can happen. And I guarantee if we look at the background of the gunman that attacked that school in Connecticut, I'm sure there was a lot of disturbance. Bullying, I'm sure, was part of the whole process. So I'm going to welcome the program Gary and Larry Lane. Gary and Larry, how are you?
Doing good. Thank you guys for having us back on.
All right, really excited to talk to you. Let's first give us an update on the movie. How is it going now since the last time we talked a month ago?
The movie is doing great. We actually we did sign with Breaking Glass Pictures, so they're representing the distribution. So right now you can find the movie everywhere. It's on Amazon, it's on Walmart.com, Barnes & Noble. So it's doing really well with the sales, and that's partly due to the fact that in November, Dolly Parton herself, she released a book called Dream More, which is all about her following her dreams and wanting people to go out and follow their dreams, which is exactly what we did in the movie Hollywood's Dollywood. So that kind of went hand in hand on Amazon, and Amazon started noticing that when people would buy her book, that they would also buy the movie. So they did a lot of suggestive selling and really kept us linked in with Dolly, which has been, you know, amazing with helping get the message of the movie out there. And another way that I know you guys, being the Total Tutor, with education, another way we're really tied in with Dolly and her new book is 100% of the proceeds of her book go to the Imagination Library, and we give 10% of every DVD sold to the Imagination Library as well. And a lot of people don't know that she does have a program called the Imagination Library, and it's all over the world. It started in her little county in Sevierville, Tennessee, and now it's gone all over the world. But what it is, the Imagination Library takes children who are impoverished areas, and they give them a book a month from the time they're born until the time they turn 5 years old and go to kindergarten. So just the way that she helps promote literacy, where parents can read to their children who might not be able to afford books in their areas, because she's really heartfelt on that issue because her father couldn't read or write. So it's kind of been a stand that she's got behind, and she's really done a lot for literacy in the world now.
Well, I think that's tremendous to hear, and especially with the book, 100% of the proceeds. People definitely need to go out to get the book and also the DVD, but it must be amazing. Larry, I think Gary was talking. Again, I'll get confused sometimes, but I think I'm on the right track. Larry, it must be amazing to know, based on your story, how you went out with that dream to go meet Dolly. And now getting signed, it's got to be just unbelievable. And also to know that some of the proceeds is going to give back to help people who can't read.
Well, absolutely. You know, just the message alone, it was a very hard story. It was hard to tell our story, but we really didn't know what the response was. We knew that we were going to do it together. But then, you know, it's completely gratifying to know that not only Dolly's behind it, but we're also just getting thousands of messages, people reaching out to saying, thank you for telling your story. You know, you gave me the courage to be all that I can be, and for me to dream, and for me to honestly be honest about who I am and just kind of let the world know it. So, you know, it's so much bigger than just our story, but to know that our message is helping and changing people, that means the world to us. When we heard that Dolly had mentioned in a press junket that she had mentioned that she loved us and she supported the film and she was proud to be a part of it, we couldn't have asked for anything better when we started the journey. We had no idea that it was going to take us all around the world.
Now, Gary, did you guys get to meet Dolly yet? Is it, 'cause now, especially with the team up, you guys are going to have some sort of press conference together, right? At one point, especially with the book and the DVD being connected so much now?
Well, see, her manager, she's ripped out of Nashville. Her manager writes us all the time. They did some great write-ups on us, and there's been a lot of press coming out. So he writes us, and he just says, great press, guys. You know, Dolly is on your side. And another great thing we've got going on right now, Ovation Television, they are doing a new series in February of this year on Dolly, and it's called Dolly Parton in Song, where they take six of her songs, and each song is an episode of the series, and four out of the six songs are featured in our movie. So the producers over there at Ovation TV, they approached us about being a part of that new series and having clips from the movie being put into the series. So we're kind of staying in rotation with Dolly, which isn't a bad thing. So we're kind of getting really grouped in there, because she did let us have, we signed the contract for 16 of her songs in the film. So when people do see the film and we're telling our story and they do hear the music and see what Dolly meant to us growing up in North Carolina, they really know that she is a part of it. And we know what a gracious person she is and what an amazing person she is. So our platform has really been to shine a spotlight on her and just all of the amazing things that, you know, she has done. And we're pretty fortunate, because I was going to tell your listeners, we've got two national shows coming up that we did where we're going to be promoting the DVD. One will be the Jeff Probst Show on NBC, and that should air sometime in the new year in January. And then we also did the Marie Osmond Show on Hallmark, and that'll be airing in January as well in the new year.
Well, you'll have to come on right before the event. This is your press place, guys. You can do your interview, promote what you like, come on my show anytime, and that's why I'm so excited about the monthly segment, so we can promote to our listeners out there that, yeah, and the view, so people view in and watch those two things and see you guys grow, which I hope, and I'm excited. Now, what I was saying, Larry, that I guess if you guys keep exploding with the DVD, I'm sure before you know it, it'll be all three of you together doing some signings and stuff like that, if it keeps going where it's going.
Absolutely. And you know, she's Dolly's doing a lot of stuff. She's writing her own music right now for her own, you know, Broadway play, Her Story. I know she just did 9 to 5 on Broadway, but she's actually going to do one of the story of her life. So she's always got a lot of projects. But one thing Dolly's always done is she stood behind her fans. So, you know, I know it means a lot to her that, you know, we're out there promoting the book and she's out there standing behind us. So she's just an incredible lady. She's a great businesswoman. We've always respected her. And this was the documentary was really our tribute to her, to let her know, you know, what we felt from her in our childhood, an acceptance and a love. And she never, you know, would have turned her back on us. So she's just great. We love being anything affiliated with Dolly, and she knows that we're out there promoting her book right now. So we're kind of working together already, but we would love to do something in the future, a future project with her.
Well, I think, again, when we first talked, you didn't have the contract. You didn't have anyone that signed you. Now you're signed. You have some amazing things coming up with the media. And now also, Gary, the tour. Now you're back in North Carolina right now, but I know you're getting ready to tour college campuses. So tell us more updates of what's going on there.
Well, we actually have a really good friend in Chicago, and his name's Greg Braird. And when we played the Chicago Film Festival there last year, he saw the movie and the impact that it had on the audience there. And what he does is he sets up college tours. He goes around and promotes, you know, he does different seminars on bullying. He talks about just a lot of different issues that represent the LGBT community. He even has one going around right now with Matthew Shepard's mom, Judy Shepard. She's on a tour with him. But he said, I really want to try to do like I want it to be like about acceptance and inclusion. He said, I really think we can try to get Leslie involved. We can try to get Chad Allen involved, get you guys involved. And so that's kind of what it turned into. It was just talking, and then as we got a little closer and he started just kind of pitching it around, he started getting interest in it. And then he said, you know, I think we need to talk to Chad and Leslie, find out what their availability is. And so then it kind of, they came on board. And so now what we do is any college campuses around the U.S. if they are interested in having us come and, you know, do a discussion, you know, in front of the panel, you know, to be on the panel with the Q&A. It's Leslie Jordan, who everybody knows him from Will and Grace, and he won, you know, an Emmy for his performance there. And then Chad Allen, and they're both, you know, really big advocates in the LGBT community. And then us talking about Hollywood and Dollywood and following our dreams. And then Greg is also on the panel. So we're just lining up schools. We just booked a university in Miami, Atlanta. So we're just kind of slowly watching the schedule fill up for 2013.
Very interesting. So, Larry, any set dates yet?
I know that Greg said they're getting a lot of interest. I think he said something about one in Boston's already booked us, but really after the holidays, we're expecting some really good dates for early spring. So I'm excited about it. I think a lot of the schools will, you know, want us to be there. There's something great about being able to follow your dreams. And I know when we were sitting on the Rosie O'Donnell show, we told her, you know, she was a positive force for us because she did come out. She's still living her dreams and she's being exactly who she wants to be. So we need more of those positive role models to come out in our community, and they're really, really starting to. So, you know, we really wanted to, like I said, get our message out there. We're now on Amazon.com. You can find Hollywood to Dollywood. So being on that bigger scale with Breaking Glass Pictures, that's really, really, really helped us get our message to the masses. And I know they're moving a lot of copies of the movie, which is great.
That's great. And I guess, go ahead. Sorry, Larry.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, and this is Gary. Sorry, I jumped in there. I like to step on Larry when he's talking. But the tour, we just have really started promoting the tour because it did take a little bit to get Leslie and Chad cleared up where they could actually be advertised and actually be on the road with us. So now that we've got everything locked in, we're really hoping that we can, you know, start getting the word out there, and Leslie and Chad are promoting it as well. And it's just something you need out there, like you said, in schools. And, you know, there is a lot of bullying out there. We've all gone through it. There's a lot of issues that can be touched on. And I really feel like, you know, that the tour is a way we can really get out there and just continue to get our message out there.
What I need to do also is connect you with Catherine Kramer. She would be another, Kat Kramer would be a great one, especially when she's working with Lily Tomlin and stuff. When you guys get back out to Hollywood, I'll make sure I get you guys an introduction to talk to each other, because you both are promoting the same stuff. Lily did a really good documentary with Kat on bullying, and especially with the LGBT group and everything. So really you have to kind of go into that and research that a little bit, but she's phenomenal, and she's a monthly guest on this show as well. So I think that the goal, guys, is I see your future really bright. I'm really excited for you, and every time it seems like it's more and more. Are you guys doing any acting on the side? Because, you know, it's really funny. I was talking to some of the other celebrities, and yeah, they have so many different projects going on, but still, yeah, you got to still pay the bills in other ways as well. So Larry, are you guys doing any acting right now as well?
We are going on auditions. I mean, it's a little slow during the holiday, but they'll be picking up for pilot season after January. So our agent's already called and make sure exactly when we're back in town. So January usually starts to really pick up because they do mid-season replacements. So, yeah, we've got a lot of stuff in the works. I know the college tour, I think we're going to have a lot of dates there. And we just kind of, with two of us, we can kind of, you know, do a lot of stuff. We always said if we were triplets, we could really rule the world. We need one more.
Well, 2013, guys, 2013, that's the key, and especially to make a difference. And I think that, Gary, you would speak, especially when we're talking schools and bullying, because this is a big thing that literally if you torture somebody so much, you never know what can happen, and that it destroys. Either they'll kill themselves or they'll end up hurting others later on, so that we have to find a way to finally end this in schools. I mean, I think that that's something that needs to be addressed in so many ways. Even talking about Connecticut, is the fact is we need to end these differences and these where kids feel more safe going to school, because the bullying is rampant, in my opinion, Gary.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, it's kind of funny because growing up, you know, we would hear our parents say, well, when I was young, this happened and that happened and this happened, and I kind of caught myself doing it the other day because, you know, when we were 13, 14, 15, you know, we did have Nintendo, but we were playing, you know, Q-Bert and, you know, Donkey
yes.
Kong and all this stuff, but now it's like Worlds of War and, you know, Call of Duty, and they're
it's
just
ridiculous.
Like gunning people down. I think it's Yeah, I think it's just the society has changed so much, and kids just get locked in their room. Kids don't go outside and play hide and seek anymore, or, you know, get out with their friends. They're just locked up in computers, and now they've even made the games where they can link up to their friend who's sitting in his room on the computer and play the game together and don't even have to get out and interact with each other. So it's just changed a lot with texting and, you know, a lot of things have changed, and it's kind of hard to look at, especially when things like this happen, you know, what happened in Connecticut. You almost can't wrap your head around it, but you know that something has to be done to change it.
And I think that I'm glad you guys brought this up because, I mean, bottom line is Kat Kramer and I were talking about when it happened in Aurora, Colorado, the shooting. I said flat out that we need to eliminate these violent video games and violent movies from our society because of the copycats, because of these situations, the way we cover things. So I think that, but I guarantee you look at every one of these people, they were bullied in school. And I know that there's a lot of other mental issues with them, but it makes it worse. If people have mental illness and they have lots of hurt feelings, it comes back in certain ways. So if we can create more acceptance, if we can make administrators really stop this and teachers really not turn their backs on bullying and parents advocating no bully zone schools, I think we'll be much better off. Don't you agree, guys?
I 100% agree, and I really feel like that you are going to see changes coming. I know I followed even over in Europe. They had a horrible school shooting in 96, and after that, you know, they had kind of had, like us here in the U.S., we had the NRA, you know, that fight for the guns. But after that happened over in Europe and all of those children were killed, they had such an outcrying of the public to bring change and want the law to change. They passed it, and now the handguns and all those things are illegal over in Europe. So, and I think, I don't know, I was looking at statistics because I've really been bothered by what happened, and I think they might have had maybe 30 or 40 people that were killed by handguns last year over in Europe and the United Kingdom, and I think we had over 11,000. So if you look at those two numbers, you definitely see that it has paid off for, you know, what they did over in Europe after they had their school shootings. And I think we've had, what, 15 or 16 out there, Columbine.
And I completely agree with you. I'm not a hunter, for example, and I think that some of these guns do not need to be produced, so that it has to be through the black market in such of a difficult way, because there's no need but the military to have these guns and police officers. No one else should have these. And if we manufacture them where it's so easy to get them or steal them off of somebody else, that's something I think that we have to protect our kids, and we have to figure out ways, but I want to look at all the different options. But guys, again, thanks for calling and bringing out the great information. And when I talk about acceptance and bullying, I really think that we have to look at protecting our children and things like what happened in Friday in Connecticut, and then also other issues that have occurred with you guys being bullied and then other counterparts that have committed suicide. We have to figure out a change. We have to make schools safe and eliminate bullying. So thanks again for calling. Information, I'll go with Larry because I keep losing track who I've talked to tonight. Larry, where can we find more information on both of you?
You can actually go to www.hollywood2dollywood.com. Also on Amazon.com, the movie is available. Just search Hollywood to Dollywood. And Gary, you can do the Twitters because he does all the social networking. And it's also on Walmart.com as a film. But then you have our Twitters. I write you all the time because I always keep up with the Total Tutor, and we appreciate you guys having us on. But we also have Facebook and Twitters, and everything is either under Lane Twins or Hollywood to Dollywood. We have a movie site and a twin site. But we just want to thank you for having us on and hope all your listeners have a happy holiday and a happy new year.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys, and thanks for calling, and look forward to talking to you in 2013. So take care.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. You're listening to Toll Education Spotlight Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. One of my now monthly guests, it's so much fun to talk to somebody who was an NHL player, who now is an author, and I guess promoting a brand, entrepreneur, many different things. Someone welcome to the program, Sean Pronger again. Sean, how are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you doing?
Doing great. And I wanted to kind of touch base this interview on what's happened. When we were talking last, the book had finally launched. You were finally seeing it listed certain places. But I'm sure it's been a whirlwind since then, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, it's been exciting. I mean, I got to tell you, I've done more radio interviews in the last 4 weeks than I did in my entire 11-year hockey career combined.
Oh, wow.
So it's been a lot of fun. It's been, you know, kind of exciting to see how the book's been received. So it's finally nice to be able to talk about it being out there as opposed to, you know, when it's going to be out there. So, yeah, you know, it's been fun all the way around.
Well, absolutely. And I think that it's just fun just to see, again, the notoriety. You're not used to doing radio interviews because who would interview you except when the locker room's emptied completely. And now, hey, now let's get a soundbite from Sean, because that was how it was. They were always in line for different people. If you're at the Penguins, it was Lemieux or Yager. You know, you're at the end of the line. Wherever you've played at, that's what's happened. But now, because of promoting the book, you got to go out there and interview. So what have you seen so far? And I think that's to educate people. As you know, you did my radio show a few times. You were doing a couple other radio shows. But now, because the media blitz of all these different places you've been going on, what have you seen interviewing with these different hosts? What is it, been a lot of sports shows, or is it varied?
You know, it's been mostly sports shows. I've done a lot of, you know, stuff with TSN up in Canada. You know, everything's been pretty much up in Canada. Maybe one U.S. kind of based show. But for me, it's just been a lot of fun. I really find that, you know, people that have read the book and then are, you know, interviewing me or asking questions, it's really helpful because they can ask on specifics. And I find those are the best interviews. So it's really been a learning experience for me to kind of, you know, before I just thought, like, hey, I tell you about the book, and I thought that's just the way it is. But when they're talking about specific stories, I find I can elaborate on it, and it's a lot better. It goes a lot better.
See, and my opinion is when you and I connect is, again, there's so many different things to talk about. The book, we'll get to that, trust me, and specific chapters, different things on the show. But I kind of want to say, hey, how, and again, my fans out there want to know how you're doing. Doing, you know, different things like that. So when you're getting interviewed by sports people, they must be huge hockey fans, especially in Canada. You must be considered now where, you know, people in Canada really didn't pay attention to you. Now they're paying attention to you because of the stories that you're bringing about your career in the NHL.
Yeah, and I think it was more eye-opening, you know, because a lot of hockey fans, not so much the people, I mean, guys that have played, they understand, but the hockey fans in general just didn't know that that's the kind of stuff that goes on. You know, the journeyman, they just see guys that are in the NHL, they just assume that everything's worked out in their whole life and they're in the NHL. And that's not the case for a lot of guys. And I think that's been the number one feedback was, like, you know, I never knew that. It's a different side to, you know, pro hockey or even pro sports that you don't really appreciate the guy that's just trying to fight to make it there.
Exactly. So you would get there, you'd have, like we said before, get that cup of coffee. And I'm sure that a lot of them had certain stories about certain NHL players. And for my audience out there, like some of the NHL players that you wrote about in your journey as the journeyman, name some that, you know, people really know well that kind of, you know, hey, this is something that they definitely need to pick up before the end of the year to check out and read.
No, I think people will get a kick out of just the, like, the kind of stuff that goes on between the time a guy would get called from the minors to when he's actually on the ice in the NHL. And, you know, one of the stories is there, I found out at about around midnight or 1 a.m. that I was getting called up. I was in Syracuse, New York, and I had to get to Edmonton for a game, you know, 18 hours later that night. And you know, how do you go about it? Okay, you get a call at 1 in the morning, your flight's at 6 a.m., and then you still got to go to the arena, get your equipment, and then go to the airport. So it's like, okay, well, do I try to sleep a couple hours right now, get up at 4 a.m., go down to the rink, get my gear, bring it to the airport, or do I go right now, get my gear, come home, try to sleep, then go to the airport? And it's like, well, none of that works. So you can't sleep, you're excited, you're nervous, so you don't sleep at all, you go get your gear, you get on a flight at 6 o'clock in the morning to fly to Detroit for an hour and a half, 2-hour layover, then to fly to Minneapolis for another hour layover, then to fly to Edmonton, where you catch a taxi to the hotel to catch the team bus to go to the rink and then get dressed for the game. Like, people don't understand. They just see a name and a transaction, and the next thing you know, he's played an NHL game. It's like, oh, that's going to be fantastic. It is, but just the stuff that happens in between, I think people will get a kick out of it, and maybe you just appreciate the guys that are able to do it.
So the behind-the-scenes part of the game, before the game starts, before the practice, just getting that call. So you would jump out of bed, and were you prepared for it the first time? Not really, right? Where you were, like, playing
in the minor leagues? Yeah, not at all. Not at all. Like, usually when you get called up, it's like the furthest thing from your mind because you're, you know, like, if you're sitting there waiting for the phone to ring to get called to the NHL, it usually never comes. It always comes when you're kind of focused on what you're doing in the minors, and then it'll catch you. I mean, the first time I got called up, it completely caught me off guard. I thought it was a teammate messing with me, and as it turns out, it was the coach of the team in Baltimore. I was getting called up to Anaheim, and it took him like 3 minutes to convince me that it was actually him, and that I was actually getting called up. And then it was like, okay, well, I don't know, what do you pack? Do you pack for a day? Do you pack for a month? And so there was just that kind of stuff. You kind of get, you know, you're anxious, you're nervous, you're excited, you're scared, and all the kind of feelings that go along with it, you know, getting called, finally getting my chance. I don't want to blow it, and then, okay, well, what do I pack? And then I got excited, went to the airport, didn't know where to park, just put it in short-term parking, thinking, oh, well, I'll be back tomorrow. So, you know, I mean, my car got towed. I mean, it was just, it was a mess. But it's like, these are all the things that people will find kind of interesting, and you know, there's a lot of funny stuff that happens to a lot of guys. I just happen to kind of get it on paper.
Well, absolutely. Let's think about specifically getting it on paper for people to see the behind the scenes. Like you said, getting your car towed. That's a funny story in itself. How did you break down the book, like, chapter wise? Because we've gone from the interview process to, I'm just intrigued to know specifically, was there a rhyme and reason to how you wrote your book, or was it just basically stories and each chapter's based on a specific story of being a journeyman?
Well, that's kind of how it started. It was going to be, originally the book was going to be kind of theme-based where, you know, this chapter is going to be about what it's like to get traded and then all the stories that go along with that. The next chapter, what's it like to be sent to the minors? What's the differences between the travel from the two leagues? Kind of that way. But then we found, as we, you know, we had this book done in March, or what we thought was almost done in March 2011, April 2011, and the publisher, the editor, was reading it, and he kept stumbling on, like, okay, now we're back at training camp in 95, I just finished, you were in, you know, like, it wasn't flowing right, so it was very confusing. So then we went in and put dates on all the different paragraphs and chapters, and even then, that was confusing, so he's like, you guys got to put this in chronological order. So I think the way we started it was probably the best way to do it, in that we got a lot of the information down, and then we kind of had to piece it back together in chronological order, and then, you know, have the segues in and fill in the gaps along the way. But when we first did the outline, it was more from a theme, like, okay, here we had to do it. You know, we had to do a whole chapter, which was the, I think the one we sent in was the Gretzky chapter, and then just the top, you know, the rest, like 3 or 4 sentences on the other chapters. And then once we had a publisher that believed in it, then we kind of fleshed it out, and then we kind of pieced it back together. So it wasn't exactly the way it finished. Wasn't exactly the way it started.
it sounds like that, and we always, we do something, we project, we never know how it's gonna finish up in a lot of ways. When we're thinking about, I guess, your career and I guess the learning experiences that you've dealt with in that career, where at the beginning you had no idea, but I'm sure you did a lot of mentoring of younger players throughout that career.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you got people with different backgrounds. You got, like, the high draft picks. You got the guys like me just kind of fighting for a spot. And so there's a lot of different ways that people got to the same spot. So each player has kind of got a different perspective. You know, one guy's got a really – he's got – the expectations on him are very high. Another guy – no one even knows he's on the team, but he's a guy that kind of has to battle every night. And so it's kind of interesting to see how the different roads to get to the same place and the different expectations. And then, you know, from that point, once you're at the same place, then you never know. I mean, you just got to get to put your way in front of the opportunity, and then you never know where it kind of will lead you.
Exactly. And I think that I was remembering, here's a story I think that I wonder is, because you're a journeyman, are you more to hook up and hang out with the players that are the top level players? Here's a story. Pittsburgh Steeler, a former Pittsburgh Steeler I interviewed. I can't remember his name, isn't that? But he hung out with Bubby Brister and Merrill Hodge, and they hung out together all over the place. And he was only there for the Steelers 1 year. Does it sometimes happen that you have less opportunity just to say, you know what the heck? I'm going to go and hang out with the big boys on the team because they're always looking for someone to hang out with that, you know, to be more down to earth. A journeyman's more likely to do that than somebody that's competing for that job. Have you seen that?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's funny. Like, some of the friendships that are away from the rink where guys hang out, you think, what? These guys would have nothing in common to talk about. But I think that's why they like hanging out. You know, you'll have like star players hanging out with journeymen because the star guys like to, they appreciate that this guy, how he lives, you know, he's got to fight for every inch that he gets. And certain, you know, elite players really appreciate that. Where guys that are elite players and everything comes easy, they kind of don't respect the talent or the skill that they have, like kind of God-given abilities. And certain guys just can't deal with that, so they don't hang out with those guys. You know, two stars may not hang out or may not see eye to eye because they just see the world differently. And I think that's why you get a different mix of guys kind of hang out together.
It sounds like it. It sounds like that happens. So who would you say your big good friends when you hung out with superstars on certain teams, who would you say would be the one that's most recognizable that you had a good friendship with?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I never playing in a place long enough to really get a really, you know, tight friendship. I mean, Paul Kree and I were euchre partners in Anaheim. Ray Whitney's the guy that I hang out with still. Rick Nash, when he was 18, you know, we sat beside each other in the locker room. We sat beside each other on a plane. We were neighbors. We spent a lot of time together. And with Rick, I think it was more like, don't do what I do, you know. But it was fun to see guys that, you know, for me, like Kevin Dineen would be a guy that, you know, I looked up to as a kid growing up. And then to get a chance to play with him, because he was a, you know, 40-goal scorer for the Flyers and the Hartford Whalers. And you know, you think he's one way, and then you meet the guy, and he is, you know, I thought he was, you know, kind of just a finesse player. And then you play with him, this guy is a warrior. I mean, he's 40 years old, challenging 22-year-olds to fights. I mean, it was so not what I thought, but like in a good way. So it was real fun to kind of meet guys and see what they're like. Because you watch them on TV and you don't get to see the full perspective. So to meet guys and hang out with them is really cool.
It sounds like it, and I think that, I guess, ultimately, are you getting good results from the book now? Now you kind of, we're sitting a couple months into it. How have book sales gone so far?
You know, I have yet to get the numbers, but I think it's gone really well. I mean, we're sold out of chapters online in Canada. We sold out, I think at one point we were sold out of 40 bookstores across Canada. It was sold out at one point on Amazon. So I think the book sales are, I mean, obviously you always want more, but without having a hard number, I think it's done really well from an ebook standpoint. I know we were in the top 10 in Canada for ebook sales.
Great.
So I think things are going really well. I mean, I'm just glad that people appreciate the story and think that it's a well-written book. I mean, like I think I told you before, we were just excited to, you know, get the opportunity to say that we were authors, you know, Dan Murphy and myself.
Right.
Be able to say, hey, we published a book. It's a great thing. If one person buys it, it would be fantastic. Now it's like, well, we want people to like it. And the feedback has been people that the only negative feedback has been for people that have not read the book. They just see like my name and Dan's name and they're like, yeah, I want to read about a grinder, you know, like, you know, sarcastically. And so everybody that's read it, the feedback's been fantastic. So it's been great.
Well, I'm hoping that we could get your co-author on the show. I was talking to your agent. We have to get that set up for next month to try to get Dan on the show or other hockey players that you've written stories about. Let's keep this going. So I'll keep connecting with you and your agent. I know you can get this done. Where any time during the day, we can maybe get a call on with somebody else that you wrote about a certain chapter or friendship in the book. A great way to kind of bring that even more of a connection, if that sounds good for you.
No, totally. I'll, I'll definitely see who I can get on the line. I mean, if the lockout continues, it shouldn't be a problem with anybody.
Hey, man. Hey, but I hope that lockout ends. That'll help your book sales even more. Maybe it's keeping your book sales going because you're the only thing to talk about. Well, Sean, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I wonder too, because I remember when I went to Vancouver a couple weeks ago. Dan and I did a book signing, a couple book signings, a couple radio, a couple TV things, and we were just praying that the season didn't start, so we had like top billing in all these radio spots. So I think it's helped. So, we've been in a lot of newspapers in Canada, and I think just the lack of things to talk about has helped get the exposure. But I still think having hockey going would still help.
It's going to help. It's going to help in the arenas when it comes back, because people are going to want to read about things and things like that. So, okay, Sean, where can we purchase the book again? My audience, again, have not purchased the book. Where can we find information and purchase the book?
So, for your U.S. listeners, if you want non-Canadian listeners, if you want a hard copy, you can go to Amazon.ca. That's the Canadian version of Amazon. Amazon.ca for hardcover, or Amazon.com for the ebook version.
All right, Sean, it was a pleasure. I'm going to keep connecting with your agent and also yourself. I'll message you on Facebook saying, Sean, come on now. Let's go ahead and get Dan Murphy first, and then let's continue to add to the list of different people to come on the show to talk about how great you are. So I'm sure you'll enjoy that.
Let's do it.
All right, take care, Sean, and we'll talk soon. All right.
Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye. You're listening to Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Spotlight Show on the Toll Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. You can follow me on Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. Well, again, a marathon of interviews the last 2 weeks, and I think I'm going to tell myself, I tried the one time nights where I almost was interviewing till 1 o'clock in the morning. I said, you know what, this is not going to work. Well, this kind of, again, it just ends up, everything piles up right before the holiday, which, again, so our topic bringing on this celebrity is kind of 2012, how it shuts down, and then plans for 2013, because she's my monthly guest. I just think she's so fantastic. Well, welcome to the program, actress and celebrity Vita Ghaffari, and I guess also journalist. Thanks for calling, Vita.
Oh, good morning. Hello. It's so nice to talk to you, Neil. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, and it's kind of funny when you say good morning. It feels like a long day, and I'm ready to go to sleep, but definitely. But I just tell you, you wouldn't believe just the craziness of this week and interesting interviews. So things are shutting down for me, I'd say, after midnight tonight. That'll be where I have one interview scheduled, maybe 2 to 3 shows, or shows I might even just do on my own to catch up with 3 weeks of programming, because pretty much my life shuts down for 2 weeks as well. It's kind of a time to just reflect. I always remember at the end of the year, and as an educator in a tutoring consulting company, and in, I guess, the radio biz, we shut down. But you're saying in Hollywood, it really shuts down very early, too. So tell us.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think it all starts because this town, I think, is run basically by advertising. And the entertainment business, I think, is. A lot of my friends that are big commercial actors, for instance, they get their auditions for the holiday commercials months and months in advance. I think even in the summertime or like early fall, I'll hear stories on Facebook about how, or Twitter, about how they have to get holiday gear out because they're auditioning for carolers and, you know, jingles and all that, especially the voiceover people as well. So I think once I see those on Facebook, I know that things are going to slow down eventually, and that's basically how it works, because I guess they do their holiday commercials way in advance. But I think my friends that are working a lot now are people that are professional carolers, people in choirs. All my singer friends are working right now. So the town has slowed down, but I kind of like the moment of reflection. I like to clean everything out for the year. Like, I go through my shed, I go through all my papers. So in a way, it's very cathartic. It's a great way to close out the year, and like you said to me earlier, map out my goals for 2013. But yeah, it's been slow, but in a way I like it because I get to focus on my own projects. I have a few things in development that I'm really excited about, and some other projects that I'm working on that I can disclose. And it's been good. I've been catching up with people. I had a really bad cold, but I feel like I didn't miss out on anything because everything is very slow. So Yeah.
Exactly. And one of the funny things when you're talking about that, I as well do that. And then also want to get my house in order for 2013 just because of the craziness at our house and our family and both of us working, my wife and I working with four kids. This is a time to do many different things. And it's a short period of time as well. That's why I guess I'm working up to the midnight hour, Friday. I have a conference call with one of my clients for 3 hours, and then after that, pretty much shut down at 6 tomorrow, and then it'll be shut down. I'll be pretty much shut down to the 27th when I have Sean Pronger on the show, and then I have maybe a couple other things. It's kind of like I have to reflect in how large things have changed in my life in 1 year with my business, my radio. So it's kind of like you as a journalist and an actress and a voiceover doing all the different gigs you do to reflect what is my game plan for 2013? So what is Vita Ghaffari's game plan for 2013?
Just to keep up with my projects. I'd love to get stuff done. I remember I produced my first short about a year and a half ago, and it's a never-ending process to this day. So I just want to, when I do stuff, I want to be sure that I can actually finish it and it's done and I'm on to the next thing, because I hate to let things linger, especially when you make any kind of a project. I think nowadays it's never ending because you've got the Twitter and the Facebook and you've got to promote what you're doing, and it's just this endless array of things that one has to do. I'm working on a project with a dear friend of mine, Jessica Matthews. She's mostly writing it and I'm just mostly getting her ideas, ironically. So, just doing that is an effort in itself. I worked with her on a project years ago, and you know, she's a very busy lady, and she's got, you know, her own things going on. But she's writing the project with a friend. It's a comedy. I came up with the idea, and I think further down the line, I'm going to produce it. So we're in pre-production for that. The script has been written. I'm working on another project called The Journeys. It's probably going to shoot in early January. Circus of Dread is probably going to shoot sometime in the spring, winter. Pond Scum, with both of them are with Mark Savage, is going to be shooting soon, maybe even over the holidays, who knows? Doubtful, but you never know. I'm also working on a couple other projects. I just shot The Catch, it's a short film recently, and my wonderful agent, Yalen, put it together, Yalen Kotler with 90210 Talents. Also, we're working on a really cool project together. He's American. He's from Brooklyn, and his wife is Iranian-American. So the documentary we're working on, he's really into Persian culture. It's called The Real Shahs of Beverly Hills. He's this tall, blonde guy from Brooklyn, and it's an interesting hanging out with him. I tell him, you're more Persian than I am. And it's about positive role models for people in our community, because a lot of CEOs, a lot of executives, I think the vice president of Google, the guy that runs YouTube, all these famous people are Iranian American, and I think this guy wants to know what the secret to the success of these people is. There's people like Bijan, the guy who founded Bebe. It's like an endless list of people.
Wow.
Never believe. I know. I remember when I would see the names, like Sahari, the designer, is also, well, I think he's Iranian, Israeli, American, but I remember I'd see these names and, like, you know, Bloomingdale's, and I'd be like, what the heck? And the guy, Bebe means Bebe, which in English means little girl or young woman. So I remember seeing Bebe the first time, like, in the 90s, and I'm like, what the heck is this? It's like a thing of, you know, like a Persian name, because, you know, where I grew up, there weren't that many of them, and they were all from the former Shah's administration. It was like, D.C. is an embassy town. Like, it was like old, fancy Iranians. So here they're doing very well in business, and I think the guy that founded Dropbox is Iranian-American. So this guy, Corey Scallon Kotler, wants to see why these people that are less than 1% of the population are so successful. So many of them go to Ivy League schools. Of course, I'm the classic Persian underachiever. I have a very wise father with 3 PhDs, but he just wants to show, like, a positive role model, because it shows, like, the Shahs of Sunset, the way Middle Eastern people, especially Iranians, are depicted in the media.
Oh, yeah.
So it's funny, like, whenever I go somewhere, people are like, wow, You're not into knives. You're not into bling. You're not into. It's strange. And a lot of my friends, people that I've been friends with for years, that are college educated people, you know, they're from LA, and they'll be like, I don't understand why you're not like these people. How you can, you know, drive a Nissan and not have like tons of makeup on your face and be like Kim Kardashian. So I think for me, I think it's kind of humorous, because growing up, I would always see, like, you know, movies like Not Without My Daughter and the terrible stereotypes, you know, cease to exist. And of course, I have to say, many of my Persian male actor friends are probably going to be A-list actors if they aren't already. But unfortunately, the roles that they get are very limited. It's, you know, it's the guys that are terrorists, or, you know, and I think Corey is very passionate about breaking these stereotypes. And I think what really touched me on this project is the fact that this guy is American. He's so into Iranian culture. Him and his wife take care of her parents. He's become more Iranian than I am. I think he'd be a great interview for your show eventually. He's a great guy. He's an agent. He's a producer. Hardworking. He was an actor who was, I think he was in the original, the Tony and Tina's Wedding. I think he was in the original cast of that back.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So he was an acclaimed actor. He was an acclaimed actor. I don't know if he's doing the acting much. I think he loves to put people together, but I think he's also an amazing actor and been kind of a mentor. So we're working on this project, trying to get people in touch with people. Unfortunately, Bijan, the designer, passed away, but there's a lot of other designers that we're working on. And interestingly enough, when we started working on this project, this new group formed that a friend of mine who's a great filmmaker, his name is Will Rai, started a group called Hollywood Iranian Filmmakers Association. And they're basically doing the same thing. They're trying to break stereotypes, coming up with our own projects in light of all that's going on. I mean, I hope there's not a war with Iran, but you never know, and I hope it never happens. But he's putting this together to say, hey, let's focus on the good. Let's make some good projects. Let's work together. Let's help each other. And so many people are already working on projects. I want to put a list together of all the projects that have come out. People are working on short films already. They're working on documentaries already. They're working on web series. They're working on all sorts of things. We're going to start writing groups. I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm talking to people at SAG-AFTRA because, you know, the unions merged.
Yeah.
And I spoke to a lady who used to be the director of diversity. Everything has changed because the unions merged. It's almost like when there's a new president, there's a transitional period. So that's been taxing, but we're going to get the unions involved, and we're trying to put more stuff out. We're trying to get writing groups together. We're trying to get panels together. We had our launch party. It was very, very successful. And ironically, it was the night of, there's a big Persian radio station. They had their party that night. It was the night of, I think, the American Music Awards and the Lakers game. And we had an amazing turnout. We had to turn press away because there wasn't room on our red carpet. So that was in November. And people keep emailing me, calling me, texting me, asking when the next party is. And I said, listen, parties are great, but I want to have more screenings. We screened some of the filmmakers' films. There was a Q&A. There was so much attention for the Q&A. People are so hungry for positive portrayals of not just Middle Eastern people, women, different minorities. Will had a film called Girl Soldier about the conflict in Africa and, you know, the mistreatment of young women and how they're turned into soldiers. And that movie was screened. So it wasn't all like Middle Eastern fare. It was great shorts. All sorts of wonderful films were screened, films that have won at Sundance. We had the trailer for my friend, the Dallara brothers, Philly Brown.
Oh, wow.
We had, which is an amazing movie. I highly recommend it. I saw a screening of it in Hollywood. It was an amazing, amazing film, and it's interesting. There was a woman in the movie. It was her first performance. Her name is Jenny Riviera. Unfortunately, she passed away in a plane crash. I don't know if you had heard about it.
No.
She was amazing in that movie. She was like the top Latin singer, and she was on tour, and her plane crashed, and it's so tragic to me because her performance in the movie, it really shook me. It was her first acting job, I think, in an American film, and this woman was really moving up the ranks. I mean, she's very successful in the Latin community, but she was transitioning into the American community, and I just, you know, I was reading an article, and my friends were quoted, and they were saying how one of the crew members was a fan of hers, or her mother was a fan of theirs, so she gave her perfume, all her albums signed, and she just seemed like this amazing woman, and gone. So
wow.
I, it's the frailty of life, but it's an amazing movie. It's called Philly Brown, F-I-L-L-Y Brown. There are some other great films that were shown. My friend Kat Tana, she's an amazing animator. She works at Disney. Kat Tana Vadani Broscheid. I hope I say her name well. It's called Avocados. She made this animated film for $100. Basically, it was her travails on the subway system and on the bus system in L.A., and it was all these different languages she put into it. It went to Sundance. The movie this woman made for $100, and the $100 was the cost of her paper, because, you know, every, you know, in animation, every frame is got to be a whole drawing, is the cost of her pens and her paper, her coloring pencils maybe and her paper to make the film. And it was about her experiences writing. She's like, well, I guess you could include the flight. I guess I'm not including the flights because this is her experiences on buses in L.A., Germany, different countries, France, I think. So it was a really, really cute short film. And everyone's like, why are you calling it Avocados? And there's a crazy man on the bus who's obsessed with avocados, and he's in the short. And it was so funny hearing the different snippets in other languages. It was a really cute movie, and I was proud that we could screen it for her. Lots of other great films were screened as well. That would be a whole episode of
Okay. So it seems like you got as much on your plate as me, and you probably could interview me in the same way and get the same things going on. But I think that, again, as a journalist as well, but you're really keeping yourself out there in Hollywood, looking at a very successful 2013. And like I said, we have to kind of dust everything off, see where we're at, reflect where we were 1 year beforehand. And I already said, well, it's a much larger audience. I was excited just to have two people on at the end, one person at the end that was just the co-author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I mean, that was a big thing for me last year.
I love that book. Yeah. Was it Kiyosaki or the other guy?
The woman. She was very
good. The woman sounds amazing.
Yeah, she was amazing. But meaning, after I put my list together of all the people I've interviewed in the last, let's say, 3 weeks, I'm like, wow. I had Eric Sleepy Floyd on the show. He's a former superstar, NBA All-Star, and also had Craig Hodges on the show this week. And I had Jenna Tarmo. I had Kelly Wells, the bronze medalist from the Olympics. It was really popular. Bailey Madison, like I said, is the big one for this week, and yourself, and we. Just, I mean,
oh,
and Tana
right.
Frederick, and I mean,
I love that 45 minutes from Broadway, and I'm a big Henry Jaglom fan, so that's awesome.
So the list goes on and on of different people that I've interviewed, and I'd say if I would have reflected last year and then said, what is my game plan? What am I going to do in 2013? And I think that's the same thing for you. Both of us are saying to ourselves, well, we need this time to breathe just to come up with how do we get through this quagmire. We need that calmness and then be ready for a crazy 2013. I'll be in L.A. in March, like I said. We're going to have to definitely hook up.
Definitely.
And just
I hope we have a screening or something then. We'd be honored to have you there. You know, Neil, I have to say, I think what you have a natural curiosity about people, and I think it's lovely. I have that as well, and I think as a journalist and as an interviewer, that is really, I mean, you have many strong suits. You're very well-read. You're an educator. I come from a family of educators and artists, but I have to say that your natural curiosity is something I haven't seen since I lived in D.C. and worked on Capitol Hill, and I think you really bring out the best when you interview people. I've caught your interviews, and I think you're like me in that I'm around very creative people, and I get so jazzed by them, like just the screening we had recently, or just
exactly
working on different stuff with people. And I think that when you're around these people, it's infectious, and you get the, you know, it's like you said, you do all these interviews, but you're just as juiced now as I'm sure you were earlier this morning.
Yes.
And your interest in people is astounding, and I think it would be so great to have you out here, because most of the time, a lot of people say, God, you ask, and I don't want to be a bragger, but they're like, you ask such insightful questions. I wasn't prepared. I was used to talking about my wardrobe or my exercise regimen, or, you know, so I think you have very thoughtful questions and very thought-provoking questions, and we live in an era where there isn't much thought, and there isn't much.
No, and then when you prepare these boring questions, and I don't know, I don't prepare at all. That's the funny thing. I mean, I prepare for the topic, and then I just go with what my interview. I was told that Larry King never wanted to know much about the people he interviewed. And somebody told me this a year ago. And more, the better I get to understand, well, I need to know the topic. I need to know specifics. But then I want to see, where does that author, actress, educator want to go towards the interview? And then based on the questions, I feed into it and say, okay, let's go. And I learned just so much. One of my favorite people to interview now are book authors. Because writers are just creating the author's corner was just a brilliant idea. And it's funny that you'd think the celebrities would pull the ratings, but it looks like if you're looking at numbers with the only numbers I can get, author's corner after 2 or 3 weeks is just going huge because people don't get the opportunity. There's not platforms out there for educators. There's no platforms out there for authors. There's always platforms for celebrities, but not their foundations or their projects. Always about, well, what's the last thing you ate this week? So I think that when I interview somebody and I look at their soul and look at specifically what do they really want to talk about so they have the time to talk about it, it's so important. But yeah, I have that passion and I see where it's leading me and who knows, but I'm definitely need the rest. And I think you need the rest. At least you started the rest. I will be resting starting at 6 to a point with 4 kids. Come on. I won't be resting, but I'll be resting in a way of intellectually resting my brain. But, and I love being on this, in the spotlight. I don't know if you ever checked out my wrestling pictures and stuff my Facebook. You got to go to my Facebook wall and check out certain pictures I have as a pro wrestler. And in LA March, GJ Reynolds and I are going to play basketball against each other. And I'm looking forward to meeting so many people in LA and really kind of get my first time there in a long time since when I was a little kid in Universal Studios. So, and I really want to be now, you have to kind of look out. I want to do some acting possibly in Pittsburgh because we are I guess a mini LA in a way where we have a lot of projects, but you know, just small deals because I
think you're in Pennsylvania, right? You're in the mid-Atlantic, right?
Pittsburgh is becoming like this huge place with tons of different deals, but it's
you know, there's a lot going on there. I mean, you're near DC, so you're near Baltimore. There's a hub of stuff going on. I have to say, when I was in DC, I love the shout outs to the SAG-AFTRA office in that's Maryland, my hometown. We have so many amazing things going on, and you're a journalist as well. I think the world is your oyster. So many of my friends have moved back home. Of course, a lot of them are from Georgia or Louisiana, but there's so much going on the East Coast. It's incredible.
Pittsburgh.
It's incredible.
I mean, Cruz's newest movie was filmed in Pittsburgh. We get about 2 to 3
Jack
movies.
Jack Reacher was filmed in Pittsburgh?
Yeah. Yeah. It was. Yeah. So, yeah. So Pittsburgh's becoming, like I said, a mini Hollywood in certain aspects. But okay. Where can we find more information on Evita? I know you're going to have a huge 2013 as I am as well. But we don't know where we're going to be at the end of 2013. That's the funny thing. Unless as we're recording on the 20th, the 21st, the end of the world. I was singing that as a joke last night. But no, I wonder what kind of the media is going to start hitting that up probably, I'd say, tonight. But well, it depends on what's going on. But where can we find more info?
On my Facebook, Vida Ghaffari, VIDA, last name GHAFF, like Frank, ARI. My website, Vida Ghaffari, but I'm currently updating that.com. Or on IMDb, just go under Vida Ghaffari. That's probably the best way to find me, IMDb.com. And Neil, I hope you come out here. It would be great to meet you, and hopefully we can work on stuff together. And you're very like-minded, and it was an honor being on your show. It's like eating healthy food as opposed to eating junk food, so I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks again. And by the way, the interview that is airing today on one of my syndicated stations, it's not even gotten through the whole craziness of the syndication deal. It just started. That's how quickly and bumped up I get with different interviews. But I was already tweeting you today on that, so you'll have to check that out. But thanks again for calling. Okay.
I will. And interesting factoid, I don't think we're related. We're probably distantly related, but the guy in the 90s who was a Greco-Roman wrestler in the Olympics was a Ghaffari. I should see if I can track him down. I interviewed him back in the day. when I was a wee lass when he was in the Olympics. His name is Matt Cafari. I should try and track him down for you. He's a big wrestler.
Oh, I remember him. I remember him. Yeah, definitely do that.
Okay. And I'll have to find people in the wrestling, and I don't know if you're interested in the MMA world.
I'll interview any of them. Well, thanks.
All right, Vita.
Thanks for calling. We're going to take the break, and thanks for calling. You're listening to Toll Education Spotlight Show on the Toll Education Network. We'll be back in just a moment.